Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Friday, April 26, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 3:20 p.m. Today we have present Representative Sadler, Representative Prox, Representative Carrick, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff to be assisting us today are Kevin Allen with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and Clark Bickford, my staff and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. We have three items on the agenda. We have bill hearings on the following: SB 228, extend board of massage therapists, from Senator Bjorkman. HB 298, alcohol warning signs on licensed premises, from Representative Gray. And last on the agenda is a first bill hearing on HB 277, licensing reciprocity fees, from the House Ways and Means Committee. We will start with SB 228, extend board of massage therapists, from Senator Bjorkman's office. Unfortunately, Senator Bjorkman can't join us today, but his staff, Laura Ashi, is here in case there are any questions from committee members. And are there any questions? No? Okay. Well, we are going to open public testimony on SB 228. Please keep your testimony to 2 minutes. So we will open public testimony now. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on SB 228? No? Okay, we will go online. I have Jill Motz. Motz, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. Through the chair, thank you for hearing this bill today. My name is Jill Motz. I'm from Homer, Alaska, and I am the immediate past chair for the State Board of Massage Therapists and have been a therapist for 20 years in Alaska. I know that there's been a lot of discussion on massage therapy in Alaska during this session, so I'll make my testimony brief. I believe that the Board of Massage Therapists has three main purposes. It by no means encompasses the full scope of the board in just these few minutes, but primarily it serves three purposes. First, it ensures public safety. Experienced therapists bring a wealth of knowledge to the table to help keep the public safe. Board members review applications, consult on investigations, review school qualifications, keep up with industry standards, and watch trends that may need to be addressed by regulators. This is done on volunteer hours, their expertise costing the program and licensing nothing in return for their work. Second, I think the board plays an important role in helping combat human trafficking. It's critical to have professionals who have full insight and understanding of the entirety of the practice of massage, with watching for key signs of sex and human trafficking. There's no one better suited to safeguard this issue than the actual people who practice day in and day out. We know where the issues are, we know what to look for, we know the language coding, the paperwork duplicity, and the absolute danger legitimate therapists are put in by any connection to sex and human trafficking in our profession. Third, the State Board of Massage Therapists monitors trends, safety, scope of practice, and code of ethics to keep therapists working in a best practices manner. As a professional, I welcome the oversight of a governing board to keep my industry current, moving forward, and safe for me to practice in my community. The board serves a critical role in managing potential problems or disciplinary issues that arise within the community. Finally, I believe this board should be allowed to continue to grow. Having only been established in 2015, we grew a program from the ground up. This is our second legislative audit, and in the last 9 years, this board has done pretty great work. This can be partially measured with the audits, but primarily in the amount of financial and community growth our profession has seen since initial licensing. We can now directly bill insurance, have a seat at the table for patient care. We have experienced a substantial average wage growth for therapists across all areas, and we've increased public safety in an efficient, direct, and responsible way. I respectfully request that you pass this bill out of committee today, and thank you for your help in keeping licensed massage available in our state. I'm available to answer any questions anyone may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Motz, just curious, in your how much expense is incurred for investigations You know, that's one of the regulatory fees is investigations of bad actors. How much is spent in regulatory investigations for the massage therapist?
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I did serve on this board for 7 years, and for two of those years, I was the chair. It is a substantial amount of money. We do have a licensing examiner, so that's kind of up there for costs. But it can be substantial, and it can vary widely from year to year. In the beginning, we saw more. As time has gone on, we've seen less serious infractions, but when we see them, they're big. And sometimes those just cost a lot. I can't give you a percentage. I just know that it is a substantial cost every year.
And short follow-up. Through the chair, Ms. Potts, we hear often that it's difficult to find people to fill jobs in Alaska. Are there enough massage therapists licensed in Alaska to serve the need, or do we need people coming in from outside?
There are plenty. I believe that there are plenty of massage therapists in Alaska. There's two new schools in the last couple of years. When it was previously sort of just the two main schools in Anchorage, I feel like that we weren't really meeting that demand, but there's a new school in Fairbanks. There's one here in the Matthew Valley. So I think that the community has sort of realized that we need those locally and has kind of stepped up and offered those classes.
Okay. Thank you. Next we have Volker Ruby. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello. My name is Volker Ruby. As a lifelong Alaskan, I have been a licensed massage therapist since 2005. I have held various leadership roles throughout the massage community and have been involved in various massage legislation in Alaska. I now own a small business in Anchorage where I work as a massage therapist. I'm in support of SB 228, continuing the State Board of Massage Therapists. It is crucial for our profession that it continues. The volunteer board is comprised of mostly massage therapists. Continuing the board gives Alaska massage therapists a voice and input in our profession. Massage therapy is a healthcare profession working with our most vulnerable population. It requires input from professional, experienced massage therapists to work with details relating to scope of practice, professional standards, investigations, or regulation changes. The volunteer board has worked hard to minimize any board-related expenses. They've made almost all of their meetings virtual. They've increased efficiency by reducing turnaround time for approving applications to only 5 days once the board is given the application from the division. The recent legislative audit recommends that the board continues. Audit findings were mostly against the division or department. There is a clear danger to the public if the board is not continued. Experienced massage therapists on the board are able to identify and anticipate details in applications, complaints, or investigations that help keep illegal elements out of our profession, such as human trafficking. Extending the board of massage therapists helps bring costs down, increases efficiency, protects the profession from illegal entities, and helps make massage therapy in Alaska a profession I'm proud to be in. I urge you to pass SB 228 out of committee. Thank you for your time. I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Representative Prox.
Just a quick one. Thank you, Chair Ruckridge. Does the board give you a certificate that is worth publishing and posting on your wall and using in your advertising?
Through the chair, yes. There is a certificate. It's downloadable now. I don't believe they're providing the paper ones anymore, and it's actually required that we keep that posted. And there's also down the pipeline, there's also it's going to be a requirement. I'm not sure if it's active yet that the board is working on to include our license number in advertisements. So that's one way that helps helps keep the legal elements, such as human trafficking, for trying to use massage as a front.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no other testimony, public testimony on SB 228 is now closed. Do any committee members have questions for the bill sponsor? No? Okay. I suppose, what is the will of the committee on this?
Chair Sumner, I move Senate Bill number 228, version alpha, also referred to as 33-LS1311-A, be advanced from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And I will object. Please call the roll.
Representative Wright is not present. Representative Carrick?
Yes.
Representative Fields is not present. Representative Prox?
Yes.
Representative Ruffridge?
Yes.
Representative Zadlin?
Yes.
Chair Sumner?
Nope. And so with four yeas and one nay, Senate Bill 228 will be reported from committee. I'll take a brief at ease to sign the bill file. Alcohol warning signs on licensed premises from Rep. Gray's office. We heard this bill in HESS and House Labor and Commerce, and today we're going to hold public testimony with a two-minute time limit. Is there anybody in the room wishing to testify? No. We'll go online. I have a Noel Leconte. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello. My name is Noel Leconte, MD. I am a medical oncologist, which is to say a cancer doctor at the University of Wisconsin Carbone Cancer Center. I also was the lead author of the American Society of Clinical Oncology Policy Statement on Alcohol and Cancer, published in 2018, and I'm an alcohol and cancer researcher. And I'm here in support of this. I want to point out that awareness of alcohol as a carcinogen is quite low. Across multiple national surveys, it's only around 30% of Americans that are aware that alcohol is a carcinogen, which is much lower than awareness of things like tobacco or UV light. Awareness amongst physicians is also quite low. And signs like this that are proposed in this bill will help people be aware of the connection of alcohol and cancer. I also just wanted to review that it's the multiple cancers that are associated with alcohol consumption are head and neck cancer, breast, liver, colorectal cancer, esophageal cancer, stomach or gastric cancer, and pancreas cancer. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Next, we have Roxanne Jones. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi there. My name is Roxanne Jones, and I am calling representing the Alaska Academy of Family Physicians. I'm calling to speak in support of HB 298. I'm a family physician. I've worked in rural Alaska, and I currently work as medical director of a family medicine clinic in Anchorage. As a primary care doc, we do a significant amount of counseling patients on healthy behaviors and recommended screenings. And what I will say is that health promotion and reminders of healthy and unhealthy behaviors cannot only be done in the doctor's office. And individuals, you know, spend far more time of their life outside of the doctor's office. So signage such as that proposed in HB 298 would be a great help. I just wanted to give a few relevant stats for the committee. The first is that nearly one in five Alaskans report binge drinking or drinking heavily in the last 30 days. So excessive alcohol use is common in Alaska. In addition to some of the more well-known risks, such as accidental trauma and cirrhosis of the liver, alcohol use is also associated, like the doctor prior to me had mentioned, with increased risks of certain cancers, including breast and colon cancers. And unlike the lower 48, Alaska, the leading cause of death down in the lower 48 is heart disease, but the leading cause of death in Alaska is malignancy or cancer. And in fact, we have the second or third highest colon cancer rate in the country. Also, though, some people might say, well, why is it a sign that matters? And I just wanted to provide some information on the efficacy of signage for public health efforts. Research has shown that signage is more effective in changing behavior in a variety of domains, such as road traffic, environmental protection, and health behaviors. And studies have shown that the signage is most effective when it's placed in close proximity to the point of action where the stated behavior is occurring, such as purchasing the alcohol. Additionally, there have been some studies done regarding warnings on tobacco products as kind of an analogous thing here. And those studies have demonstrated that even tobacco users are not fully informed about the risks of smoking. So to the previous doctor's comments, I will be honest, as a family physician of 15 years, go on public record and say, I was unaware of the extent of the carcinogenic effects of alcohol until I had heard about this bill and looked into it. So I believe very strongly that we need some additional health promotion behaviors, and for that reason, I am in support of HB 298, and I would ask that you all support it as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That is all the public testimony I see. We will close public testimony on House Bill 298. I'm going to set an amendment deadline on HB 298 for Monday, April 29th at 11:30 a.m., and we will set this bill aside until Monday. Thank you, Representative Gray. Last on today's agenda is House Bill 277, Licensing Reciprocity Fees, from the House Ways and Means Committee. We had the chair of... Oh, we'll take a brief at ease. We have the chair of House Ways and Means with us today. Representative Carpenter, please put your name on the record and begin.
I am Representative Carpenter from District 8, Northern Kenai Peninsula. And Labor and Commerce Committee. I think this is the first time, or maybe the second time, I've sat in front of you. First time for this bill, though. So this is House Bill 277, and this is a licensing reciprocity bill. This is specifically a occupational license reciprocity bill, and the intent of the legislation is to help reduce cost for what amounts to lower-income Alaskans who are finding an occupation through their occupational licensing field, whatever their field is that's being licensed. And in some cases, we're eliminating unnecessary licenses. And the bill also provides for universal reciprocity with other jurisdictions, other states, occupational licenses without reducing or eliminating the need for new residents to follow the state standards, regulations, and statutes as they currently exist. But a new person coming in would have universal reciprocity for the occupational license that they currently have through another state. And for invited testimony today, for your information, we have with us also Alistair Whitney from the Institute of Justice, who is invited to testify on this behalf. So with that, Mr. Chair, we can run through a sectional analysis, or we can go to invited testimony, whichever you would prefer. Or go to questions. It doesn't matter.
At your preference, Representative Carpenter.
Okay. Why don't we go to invited testimony?
Okay. We have Alistair Whitney. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair Sumner, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before the committee this afternoon. My name is Alistair Whitney, and I am legislative counsel at the Institute for Justice. IJ is a nonprofit law firm that works to protect civil liberties, including economic liberty. And for more than 30 years, IJ has researched occupational licensing laws and helped remove unnecessary legal barriers that prevent people from working in their chosen field. Now, IJ encourages the committee to support this bill for two reasons. First, it would significantly reduce licensing barriers in Alaska. Occupational licensing laws differ from state to state and create substantial barriers to worker mobility. HB 277 helps break down those barriers by allowing qualified workers with licenses and experience from other states to work in Alaska. Workers do not lose their skills and experience when they cross state lines. Second, HB 277 helps relieve friction in labor markets. We live and work in a national economy, but occupations are primarily regulated at the state level. Government policy should encourage people to follow opportunity rather than creating unnecessary obstacles to earning a living. And Alaska can help lessen this friction and encourage productivity by recognizing the licenses and experience of out-of-state workers. Now, what IJ has seen across the country is that licensing recognition reform is gaining steam and has wide bipartisan support. 20 states have enacted in some capacity license recognition laws, and among them, Arizona has one of the broadest. For example, research shows that Arizona's law has resulted in the issuance of 8,000 licenses, and this is since 2019, and is projected to yield a multi-billion dollar increase in the state's gross domestic product. As the Arizona law demonstrates, licensing recognition will be a boon for both Alaskans and state government. In sum, workers in Alaska should be earning a living, not a license, and we encourage the committee to support this bill. Thank you for your consideration of this important issue, and thank you to Representative Carpenter for introducing this great bill. I welcome any questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Sadler.
I'll dive in. Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Whitney. In Alaska, the occupational licensing fees are not simply a revenue collection. Well, they are linked to the expenses of regulating professions in Alaska, including the risks of bad behavior by, for example, real estate brokers who might be unethical. Part of the fees that licensed real estate agents and brokers pay funds the investigation of bad actors. Does your support for the bill consider the effect of universal licensure on the revenue stream for Alaska's licensing boards?
It does. And to be honest, because of the bill's standard for establishing fees as under a national average, it is I think difficult to ascertain at this moment what the effect of that would be, but IJ's support and my testimony here today is simply to offer not only support for the universal licensing or the recognition components of the bill, but also just the fact that the bill would make it easier for Alaskans and for folks moving into the state to go ahead and start working and obtain the proper government recognition to do so. And we think that Representative Carpenter's bill and the provision with respect to the fees would make it more affordable.
And the final question. And through the chair, Mr. Whitney, I don't wish to engage in rhetorical sparring, but have you considered is it the Institute for Justice's position that national licensure, you know, one standard that every state adhere to is a good model, even in the face of what we have, federalism, where each state has control over some of their activities inside their state? Should we have national standards for all professional licensing, which is kind of where this is at?
Amen. No. I'm sorry. No, we do not advocate for necessarily a national standard. Every state is different. Every state has their own requirements. Different geography, for example, for engineers, different weather for folks working in landscape architecture. So we're not advocating for a national standard. However, we are advocating for ways to make it easier in the way that Alaska decides and for other states to decide for folks to get licenses and to start working. I hope that answers your question.
It does. And through the chair, thank you for engaging in the discussion. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, can I respond to that line of questioning?
Yeah, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. And through the chair to Representative Sadler, the state is requiring a licensure, and the state requires that the users of that license or the population of that licensure fund the cost of that license program. The challenge that happens is the bureaucracy that gets created in order to manage a particular field then becomes the burden by which that field has to manage itself. But that's a state requirement, and a state burden that's placed on the private sector in trying to do business and just survive. So while I don't support a national standard for each one of these occupations, what I am suggesting and what would help drive down the cost is to say, there is an average price across the nation that's being paid for occupational licenses. And if Alaska is going to cost more, then we need to have a conversation about who's going to pay that additional cost, because the state is requiring the licensure. So if the burden of maintaining that licensure is on the private sector and we want to incentivize growth of the private sector, then we should be having a conversation about the cost of the regulation, the cost of the licensure on that private sector. And this would just be a forcing function to reduce that cost.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Carpenter, maybe I should have had you run through the sectional, but I do have a question. So Section 1, A, notwithstanding any other provision of this chapter, a person does not act as a fiduciary under this chapter if the person, and then there's an extensive list of trades, some of which I would think might typically be a fiduciary. Could you maybe explain that?
Can I have my staff?
Yeah.
This is Donna Arguin, staff to Representative Carpenter, through the chair, to the chair. We probably should have gone through the sectional. There's actually, it's a very dense bill that does very few things. There's a lot of conforming language in this bill. The sections in the sectional that are actually make policy changes are sections 2, 3, 14, 56.
So I guess I don't see, I see section 1, but I don't see what are we changing in section 1? So, or is that entirety of that language?
It's just conforming language.
But what is, so section 1 amended to read, and then I'm looking through here, and I don't see anything struck. Oh, I do see. Okay. The ordinance. Maybe if you could run through the sectional, that'd be great. Thank you.
Go ahead. Okay.
Through the chair, my name is Kendra Broussard, staff to Representative Carpenter. I will run through, I'm not going to run through the entirety, I'll just run over through the key points if that is okay. So I'll start in section 2. So section 2 amends the centralized licensing statute to limit total fees collected by the state for occupational licenses to the total national average fees for each occupation. Section 3 adds a new section to the centralized licensing statute to require departments and appropriate boards to issue licenses to an applicant for a license which the applicant holds a comparable license or certificate in another jurisdiction. The applicant must hold a current license or certificate in another state, district, or territory of the United States and has actively used the license during the past 2 years. Fingerprint and criminal history checks or waiver of confidentiality will be required if required for a license in Alaska. Applicants must be in good standing in their existing license issuing jurisdiction. Exceptions to this requirement are for real estate appraisers, big game transporters, and animal control agencies who have federal requirements and for general business licenses. And I'm going to skip to section 14. Section 14 amends the construction contractors to exempt from licensing requirements contractors who only perform contract work related to carpentry, cabinet making, cement finishing, door repair, drywall installation, floor sanding, glazing, insulation, iron and steel, masonry, painting, paving, pipe laying, sheet metal, or terrazzo. Then the rest is all conforming language until we get to section 56. Section 56 repeals subsections of the centralized licensing statute that removes licensing requirements, allows for reciprocity or fees in current statutes that are being superseded in this bill. License requirements that are repealed in this bill are dispensing opticians, collection agencies, commercial removal of nuisance, wild birds, and small animals, taxidermy, specialty contractors who only perform contract work related to carpentry, cabinet making, cement finishing, door repairs, drywall installation, floor sanding, glazing, insulation, iron and steel, masonry, painting, paving, pipe laying, sheet metal, or terrazzo. Repealed statutes for conforming purposes include barbering, hairdressers, aestheticians, behavioral analyst, operator of a collection agency, collection agents, professional counselors, dental hygienist, dentistry, dietitians and nutritionists, medical examiners, morticians, architecture, big game guides, massage therapist, marital and family therapy, physician, osteopath, podiatry, midwives, motor vehicle dealers, practical nurse applicants, nursing fees, nursing home administrator, dispensing opticians, contact lens dispensers, optometry, pharmacist, physical therapist, psychologist, and psychological associates in veterinary medicine. Section 57 provides for a transition on or after July 1st, 2025. A person who holds a valid license, certificate, registration, or endorsement via reciprocity, comedy, credentials may continue to practice under the license, permit, registration, or endorsement until it expires normally or is suspended or revoked. Section 58 provides for an effective date of July 1st, 2025.
Okay.
Can we, to kind of wrap, circle around, can we run through some slides that helps explain?
Yeah, why don't we do that? Thanks.
So while regulations and licensures are usually justified as a means of keeping consumers safe, mountains or regulations can easily get out of control, become counterproductive, contradict each other, and harm the economy. Alaska is ranked 24th in the nation for the most burdensome state-level occupational licensing regulations. Over-regulating occupations often disincentivizes or prevents people from pursuing an occupation that they may be passionate about and excel at, further robbing Alaska of goods, services, and a flourishing economy that could have been enjoyed. Reducing state-level occupational licensure also may be among Alaska's easiest fixes for the issue of over-regulation, since federal regulations are much harder for a state to influence. Alaska's private sector workforce is dwindling for a variety of reasons, and it will take a multi-pronged approach to encourage workers to rejoin the labor force in the state. One thing stopping some from working on transitioning to a different career is undue occupational licensing burdens. While rigorous process to obtain licenses for some careers, such as doctors, psychotherapists, and surgeons, it makes sense. There are plenty of jobs that should not have such rigorous licensing requirements. It would benefit Alaska to recognize out-of-state licenses when the holders are in good standing or join interstate licensing compact agreements, such as the Nurse Licensure Compact. It could also find ways to cut back and then on the number of barriers and licenses required to work in Alaska. Alaska needs workers, and yet the state is keeping individuals from working through burdensome licensing requirements. Alaska can be a thriving state in strong families and self-sufficient individuals. It is time to make this happen. The Institute of Justice studied occupational licensing review in 15 states from 1985 to 2017 and found that occupational and professional associations initiated at least 83% of new licenses, concluding that licensing policy is typically driven by special interest, not the public interest. Overwhelmingly, demands come from motivated parties who may put professional status or economic gain ahead of sound policy. In fact, independent government reviews most often conclude that these demands are wrong-headed. Institute for Justice recommends that government review licensing proposals using criteria such as whether there is proof of harm from an occupation, whether the benefits of licensing would outweigh cost, and whether public safety would be better protected in a less burdensome or restrictive way. Let's skip the slide. HB 277 will fast-track the economic benefits of such review by immediately allowing universal reciprocity for licenses granted by other states. HB 277 will immediately remove some of the cost burdens for licensees and prospective license. And if there's any questions.
So, Mr. Chair and committee, the bill before you took quite a while to draft, and the attorney that did it spent quite a bit of time doing it. As you review the bill, you can see that the complexity of our licensure program, if you will, our policy of licensing in the state is complex and hard to assess. It is wide-ranging in the statute, hard to amend. And that's why this bill is complicated, looks complicated. When we talk about reducing regulation in order to spur economic growth, this is exactly what we're talking about.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. I guess I would ask, in Section 14, Number 13, why are we exempting a person who performs only contracting work related to carpentry? Yada, yada, yada.
Mr. Chair, you said Section 13?
Section 14, right, Number 13. You're adding a new exemption for a number of trades, including carpentry and painting, steel, masonry, pipelaying.
For the record, Donna Ardwin, through the chair, to the chair. This bill does three things. Universal reciprocity reduces the cost of licensure for the licensees and eliminates a handful of licenses from the licensing, not the regulatory burden, but the actual licensing requirement, which is where you go online and fill out a form and pay a fee. We chose those professions by first looking at what other states are doing. And if other states, 20 or more other states, don't license these professions, we chose them. In addition, the list that you're looking at are all construction subcontractors. I generally work for a general contractor that has a license. And often, as I said, we are not removing the regulatory barriers. Also, there are regulatory barriers that are put in place by people who hire construction workers, or whether you're a general contractor or just a family hiring worker, often you can require them to have insurance or be bonded. So none of those are being removed by this, simply the licensure for these subcontractors.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Through the chair, universal reciprocity. It's a lot to unpack, I think, right off the bat. I think one of the concerns that I have or a question is in regards to particularly medical professions. I mean, the one that I would know best, I guess I'll fit the question into that. We have specific requirements in order to transfer a pharmacist license into the state of Alaska. Those are actually governed on a federal level via a all-state model of testing that has to be performed. But then there's a specific law exam that must be taken in order to ensure that you are up to date on Alaska law in regards to the pharmacy profession in this state. And so we require that before we transfer someone's license into the state. And I think it seems to indicate that that test would still need to be taken, but I'm not certain that any barriers are removed necessarily by, it seems like each section that I've looked through, especially in regards to medical licenses, most medical licenses have a reciprocity component already. I'm just wondering how many other professions were that way, where reciprocity was already a thing, and maybe each board was dealing with it in their own way. I don't know if there's a question in there. I'm kind of spitballing. So.
Can
go ahead.
Love to address it, if you wouldn't mind. Donna Ardwin, for the record, through the chair, Representative Ruffridge, or Vice Chair Ruffridge. Great question. So in Ms. Broussard's presentation, she showed that what we're aiming at here is not physicians and those who are licensed, already have reciprocity. The reduction in the burden barrier, as you stated, is not, it would be marginal for them. What this bill aims at is the lower middle income types of occupational licenses. you already have reciprocity in the state for some of the large ones, but not a lot of the, you know, like we said, contractors and small businesses. A reduction, I think you were referring to this reduction in fees, is not such a great burden, or relieving a great burden for those who are high-income professions, but it'd be great help for some of the contractors and the lower and middle-income occupational professions in the state. So it's a great question. You have a nursing compact. So those folks are really not affected by this bill. It's more of the other occupations.
Okay, follow up if I may, Mr. Chair. I noticed that there was reference to pharmacy in the bill, so that was the reason I asked, and it seemed like there was repealing language actually about our ability to transfer licenses into the state the way that pharmacists had set up to do that historically. So I'll look through that. I'm wondering, is there, and I think this would be incredibly difficult to determine because the bill is so large, but is there a estimate of a cost savings to the fiscal notes are indeterminate, but I'm wondering if there is a idea of what on average our fees are. I know for pharmacy anyway, our fee in Alaska is actually considerably lower than it is in other states. And we worked really hard in my time on the board to lower those fees. But I'm wondering if there's an idea of what the savings would be.
Mm-hmm. So, do you want to talk? Sorry. Through the chair, Vice Chair Robridge, to answer your questions, the note in a couple of the fiscal notes, there is an estimate of the reduction in the fee costs. We have, through Institute for Justice, a lengthy database that shows occupations in Alaska compared to other states, and we can provide that information to you because it's specific to every occupation. And so to another point that you made, I don't think it was a question, but if the occupational licensing fee in Alaska is lower for a profession, then it would be unchanged under this bill.
And I think one last follow-up, Mr. Chair. The license fees in other states would be an ongoing, I would assume, rolling average of some sort. So would you envision the department sort of keeping tabs on all other states' occupational licensing fees and then adjusting their essentially cap on a regular basis? I didn't see any language about how often that would be, that average would be assessed, and I could have missed it.
But through the chair, to Representative Ruffridge, there are organizations out there like the Institute of Justice who are watching for those already, and it would be a department would be able to use that as a reference point for what the national average is per a organization that specializes in looking at national averages of costs.
All right, thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair to the sponsor, I'd like to know more about the Institute for Justice. I thought at first that was kind of a criminal justice, correctional kind of thing, but it sounds like it's economic justice. I'm not sure if Alistair Whitney, or the sponsor, wants to give us some more information about who the Institute for Justice is, what kind of issues, just more about it, please.
If Mr. Whitney is online, I would give him an opportunity to plug his organization.
Yes, absolutely. And Alistair Whitney, for the record, thank you for the question. As I discussed a little bit at the beginning of my testimony, the Institute for Justice is a nonprofit law firm, and we work to protect civil liberties. We've been involved in litigation and advocating for policy around the country for decades. The goal of our organization is to make it easier for Americans, with respect to this topic that we've discussed today, make it easier for Americans to work in their chosen fields and protect economic rights for all. And we think this bill
is great for doing that. And it would be a great way to make it easier for folks to get licenses and to get to work. And as the Institute for Justice has studied extensively with our efforts to help reform and pass universal licensing recognition in Arizona, it has been such a great boon to both the citizens of the state and the government in terms of there being a single law that helps guide administratively licensing authorities' decision-making on that's very simple, on whether to grant a license, and most of that consideration has to do with did the person work for a certain amount of time, did they hold a valid license, and also, you know, to obviously the folks in the state of Arizona, and since 2019, since that bill was passed, you know, over 8,000 licenses have been issued. That's 8,000 additional people getting to work, starting businesses, driving the engine of economic growth. And, you know, almost all of the licensing reform that we've seen in this area moving towards universal recognition has happened in the last few years. And so it's been really gaining steam. And the Institute for Justice has assisted many of those states in passing those laws and in spreading the knowledge about the benefits to both the state citizens and the state government. Just makes life easier. It's a win-win for all. And I hope that answers your question.
It does. I'd like to probe that a little bit, Mr. Whitney. So your nonprofit, you protect civil liberties. It's a good thing. Everyone's for civil liberties. Do you focus primarily on or just on occupational licensing issues? You might help illustrate more of what your institute is, if you can tell us what policy wins you're most proud of and what kinds of issues you engage in.
Yeah, absolutely. So not only are we talking about economic liberty, but, you know, private property, First Amendment issues, educational choice. Institute for Justice is primarily, as I said, a law firm. And so we have litigation efforts across the country to help folks fight unjust licensing regimes. For example, in Louisiana, our team is fighting for hair braiders to be able to practice hair braiding, given a constitutional issue that was that came up with how the state licensing board in Louisiana regulates hair braiding practice. The Institute for Justice also hangs our hat on eminent domain and fighting government's effort to take people's private property. And there's a significant Supreme Court case, Kelo v. New London, something that IJ was involved with, I believe, back in the mid-2000s, fighting for a woman's right to keep her home and not give it up to the government so that they could bulldoze it and build a new development on her property. So really, we're involved in many areas across the country, both private property, again, First Amendment rights, educational choice, economic liberty, and also, in addition, some criminal justice reform efforts with respect to unduly burdensome fines and fees for folks on parole or probation, folks trying to access court records, not having to pay unduly burdensome fines and fees to just get transcripts in their own cases. So the Institute for Justice is involved and helps advocate for those folks to and you know, the people of the state, the citizens, to be able to do that in less burdensome ways.
Good. Follow up? If I may, thank you for that, Mr. Whitney. That helps me a good deal. In your institute's national work, do you know, does any other state set its licensing fees according to an average, national average?
Not that we are aware of, but it would be, I think it's just, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that with respect to Alaska, as Representative Carpenter noted, it does have a fairly high burden rank, and it's in, you know, the top 20 of the country as far as burdens. And I think this bill does address some of those burdens with respect to fees and obviously licensing recognition. And I think to answer an earlier question, and hopefully answer your question as well, you know, the average fees in the state of Alaska as of 2022 range from $284 to $439, with some being under $100 and some being over $700. And this is just to obtain a license to work. And if, you know, as has been said earlier, if you are a lower income individual, if you're an individual from a marginalized community, or somebody who is just trying to climb the economic ladder, paying hundreds of dollars of fees for that license to work can be cost prohibitive. It can discourage folks from getting starting small businesses, pursuing their passions. And so, this bill, again, to answer your question, we're not aware of any other state that does it this way. But this is a great and novel way to make sure that both the regulatory costs of administering, these licenses, there's funding for them, but while also respecting that, the fact that these high fees do discourage folks from getting involved in their professions and starting businesses. And so I think it strikes a great balance between those two competing aims.
Okay. Representative Carpenter, the attorneys wrote this. Does it apply to attorneys? Would they have reciprocity with the Alaska Bar?
Attorneys are professional licensing, not occupational licensing.
Oh, okay. So this is only for occupational licensing. Okay. Representative Prox?
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I guess for occupational licensing, there would be some, I would think, in your industry. Alaska encounters unique situations. Have you given thought to the potential occupations that it might be beneficial to have us separate details for Alaska? I'm thinking, concrete finishers. Well, a lot of the construction, part of the construction, I just don't know.
Through the chair, Representative Prox, maybe if I take a step back and say to a business owner, what is the value of the license for somebody that I've hired as a subcontractor, for example, or from the perspective of the client, what's the value of the license? The license is saying, it's certifying, right, that the state says that this person can do what they do.
Right.
From an employer's perspective, if I'm hiring somebody as a contractor to do a particular job, the license is supposed to be proof that they're capable.
Right.
But we know that that isn't always the case, even though people have certifications. So the certification right. itself doesn't make somebody capable. There's a cost there that's borne by the person who's wanting to get into business doing a certain job, skill. And there's a private sector engine that's going to reward them for doing a good job and not reward them if they can't do a good job. The piece of paper and the cost for that piece of paper really don't have anything to do with whether the private sector is going to reward them for doing the job or not. That's the concern here. Is that we're asking the state to say these people are certified and there's a cost associated with that, and it doesn't really matter whether they can actually do the job or not.
Well,
correct.
Representative Carpenter, I don't think for these construction trades there's really a fitness test or anything like that. I think it functions more as a check to make sure that they're insured and bonded. I'm trying to think, but I can't think of any of these that. And maybe we have Sylvan Robb here, perhaps, if members have
and
questions.
I can step aside and let her come forward. I would just say the employer or the person who's hiring, don't they have the ultimate responsibility to ensure that whoever they hired is licensed or bonded and insured? The employer, if you're hiring somebody and requiring that certification or licensing and bonding as a subcontractor, isn't the employer ultimately the one that has to ensure that who they are doing business with is bonded and insured?
Yeah, and through the chair.
Through
the chairs. So I live in other states. My boy is a subcontractor. He doesn't have to have a license. A general contractor has to have a license. But everyone who hires him requires him to have insurance.
Would you like me to step aside and
let's have Director Robb up here for just a little bit. I think maybe there's some questions. Thank you, Representative.
For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. Did you have a specific question, Mr. Chair? Or
I think probably there's a few. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Quick on the draw here. Through the chair, Ms. Robb. The question just arose about the difference between occupational and professional licenses. Help us set the stage here for what this significant bill addresses. Please make that differentiation clear for us.
Through the chair to Representative Sumner. I'm looking right at it and reading it. my apologies, sir. The division does not have a distinction, we're the Division of Professional Licensing. That encompasses all of the many professions that we license, construction contractors, medical doctors. And so I think there may be a distinction made by some people, but in many instances, professional licensing or occupational licensing can be used interchangeably. And this bill does touch on, I think, what people would sort of classically think of as professions, pharmacists, physicians, et cetera.
Okay. So they're largely interchangeable. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Robb, for being here. Would there be a need to have, it seems like maybe there would need to be a large regulations project that would ensue if this bill were to be adopted by each board potentially to establish a reciprocity? I'm not certain if I'm reading it correctly, but I'm wondering if that is your thought as well, that each board would then be required to have some sort of or each licensing entity would have some sort of regulation that would require reciprocity, similar to the military options that I think we did a few years ago, where it was a requirement to allow licensing for military transfers of spouses and those in service.
Yes, thank you for the question. Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, I do think there would need to be regulations projects for many of our professions because there are a great number of statutes that are deleted by the bill. Additionally, the bill is problematic because the sections that allow for licensing currently by credential, by comity, by reciprocity, which is the language depends on the profession, those have been repealed by the bill, but then reference to the new reciprocity section has not been added back in under the board's authority for each of the boards. So we do have some concerns about the impact that this might have. Again, just an example, in Section 33, because of the removal of the language by reciprocity, our reading of it is that that may result in midwives who are licensed under the reciprocity of this bill, their licenses would not expire. So it's not an unsolvable problem, but we would have to go through and look at the regulations closely to see where the statutory authority for the regulations has been removed and then adjust regulations to, either point to the new statutory authority provided by the bill. Or remove regulations that are no longer allowable.
Thank you. Just a brief follow-up, if I may. I just, for my own sake, I have to think about it in terms that I am familiar with. So Section 56 of the bill puts it in a repeal of 0880-145, which deals with pharmacists. The section is titled Reciprocity License Transfer, and it lists out how a pharmacist can have their license transferred into the state. But the bill repeals it, but I know that at the beginning of the bill, there is obviously a component set forth by which reciprocity can happen in a new fashion. Well, that's Section 3, adding a new section in 0801, which I think Is a lot of the same requirements that were in 0880-145, but not entirely the same requirements. And then I know that we have regulations that are tied to 0880-145. So I'm trying to understand what you said. Let's just take this one board, for example. They need to go back and redraft their regulations in order to comply with essentially a new reciprocity language?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, I believe they would, because currently the statutory authority for the existing regulations that address the requirements to obtain a license through reciprocity use the statutory authority that has been deleted here. But the bill does not then point to that new reciprocity that exists in this bill in Section 3.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I'm in support of the concept, and I'm really trying to find the downsides, and I can't. But that doesn't mean there might not be some. Can you see some occupations or professions that there are situations unique to Alaska that might necessitate specific licensing for that occupation? Mm-hmm. Have you encountered those?
Yes, through the chair to Representative Prox. The department does have concerns with this bill. We agree with what we interpret to be the sponsor's goals with this bill, which is to allow people to get to work more quickly in Alaska, to reduce licensing fees, and then to reduce the regulatory burden. The governor issued an administrative order for the division to review all of its regulations with a goal toward right touch regulations, basically enough regulations to ensure that the public is safe, but not additional and burdensome regulations. We feel that, achieving those goals of allowing people to get to work more quickly and reducing licensing fees are accomplished in a way that is easier for the department through several bills that already exist, the governor's bill, HB 85, that's universal temporary licensure, and HB 314, which removes investigations fees, which would result in lower licensing costs for many professions. We're concerned about the unqualified reciprocity in the bill. Nearly all of our reciprocity were licensed by credential or through comity, whatever wording the profession uses, currently say that the jurisdiction that the person has the license in, that is sort of qualifying them to obtain an Alaska license in this function, in this fashion, needs to have substantially similar requirements to Alaska. So for example, if Alaska requires that you pass an exam and have a degree in a particular field, that the other state would have those same requirements. And for example, not just having gone to school and not passed an exam. And so this doesn't have any qualifications on that reciprocity. It just says if you have a license in good standing, you're entitled to an Alaska license. Additionally, another concern that I think it's specifically to your question, Representative Prox, is the reciprocity, while it does exempt a few professions, it does include some that we typically exclude from reciprocity. So the governor's universal temporary licensure bill does not include a provision for game guides, because again, there's very specific Alaska knowledge that is required, that is demonstrated by having that license. The same holds true for marine pilots. I think we would all agree that being knowledgeable about the waters of the Gulf of Mexico is not a good metric for somebody being familiar with Prince William Sound. And then we do, as Representative Ruffridge alluded to, a number of our professions have specific Alaska requirements. The Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors requires an Arctic engineering knowledge be demonstrated prior to obtaining an Alaska license. So those are some of the things that the division has concern about. And then we do worry that if the new calculation of fees required us to reduce our fees, since no other funding source is offered, the only way we could remain within our budget would be to hold positions vacant, which would increase licensing times, sort of counteracting the point of the bill of trying to get people licensed more quickly.
Representative Sather.
Thank you, through the chair, Ms. Rubb. I'm going to be flippant, and then I'll ask a serious question. I'm not sure if you would like this bill because it's going to reduce a whole lot of work for you, or if it's going to take away most of your mission. I'm not sure, and I won't ask your specific position, but to help us again set the stage, what elements go into setting occupational license fees in Alaska? Again, the bill does three main things, and I appreciate that brevity. Reducing licensing costs to the national average, eliminating a few occupations from licensing requirements, and having universal reciprocity. So on that first one, what are the elements of licensing fees in Alaska?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, currently licensing fees, the formula for that is specified in AS0801065, which requires that licensing fees cover the cost of regulating the profession. And so that is inclusive of the staff required to review the applications as they come in. It also includes investigations as well as attorney costs and hearing costs at the Office of Administrative Hearings if someone objects to license action that's taken against them. It is inclusive of all of those costs. So it includes everything from our regulation specialists who help write regulations projects for various professions, our staff who open the mail and scan it into our system, the maintenance of that computer system. So it includes all of those costs. And that's not the case for all states. Some states have investigations in a separate area. Others have some state funding that supports their licensing activities. So it's not entirely covered by fees.
Follow up. And I ask Mr. Whitney through the chair, so Ms. Rubb, do you know of any states that set their occupational licensing fees, since that's kind of your wheelhouse, that set them by an average, either national or regional?
Through the
chair. I am unaware of. Sorry.
That was to Ms. Rubb.
My apologies.
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, I would agree with Mr. Whitney. I'm not familiar with any entity that sets it based on a national average. Again, it varies quite a bit from state to state, depending on what's included in those licensing fees, depending on how the state is structured.
Okay, thank you.
This is quite a lengthy bill. Director Rubb, would this impact licensing for residential home builders as well? Because that, to Representative Prox's point, I would think that would be one profession that may require Alaska-specific knowledge. Building houses in Florida may not adequately prepare you to build houses in Fairbanks.
To the chair, as was highlighted, there are a number of specialty construction contractor that are currently require a license that would be removed if this bill were to pass. Residential contractors are not touched by this bill, with the exception that they would be part of this new fee setting, and so may see either a decrease in fees, or additionally, we're somewhat concerned about an increase in fees because we are adding somewhat to the administrative burden. Collection agencies will not be required to be licensed anymore, so they won't pay any fees, but they still need to submit paperwork, and the division would need to investigate in the event that we received complaints. And so because of the way the division is funded, we would have no choice but to treat those as administrative costs and spread them across all other licensees to cover that.
Mm-hmm. So would this would not create reciprocity for residential home building certification?
Mr. Chair, I believe it would.
Oh. Anybody else?
Well, I don't know. I guess I
through the chair, maybe to the chair, because you have more experience in this than I do. There is a big difference in hiring a contractor from Alaska for residential work or somebody that's been here for a while and somebody that just comes up. There just is enough difference. I don't know if that's a licensing issue or an experience issue. Do you happen to know?
Potentially both, Representative Brox, although I would say for some of these trades that are having licensing requirements removed, the license per se is more of a check to, and Director Rob can correct me if I'm wrong here, but for like, especially license for carpentry and finish work and that sort of thing, it's more of a check that they have insurance and bonding rather than some sort of a strict test of knowledge or anything of that sort. I don't believe there is such a thing, but possibly also the length of the license that they have in Alaska could be an indicator of their Alaska-specific knowledge, to your point.
Right.
A fresh license may indicate, you know, I mean, maybe they were up here, but maybe they just came up here. Director Rob, I mean, if you could correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Mr. Chair, you are correct. The only construction contractors that are required to pass an exam are those doing residential construction.
Yeah. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner, through the chair, Director Rob. In regards to licensing compacts, and we've had a number of those bills throughout this session, I think there's a couple of compacts where we have already entered into as a state, but those individuals that are, they pay a fee to the compact, but they also pay some sort of fee still to the, they still pay a fee to the state, it seems like, in my recollection of that. But I'm wondering if, because the presentation mentioned compacts being a somewhat similar solution to just reciprocity in general. I'm just wondering if you could answer the question as to whether or not if a license, if a person enters into a compact, do they still pay a fee to the state in which they are providing their licensed profession or occupation?
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, there's not a one-size-fits-all structure for compacts. Alaska is not currently a member of any professional licensing compacts, but there are, as you mentioned, a number of bills that are in front of the legislature, and so several that we have familiarity with. In many cases, that is the way they are structured. So you are licensed in your home state, Colorado, for example, and then if you wish to come and practice in Alaska, you would pay a fee for a practice privilege in the state of Alaska and then be bound by the scope of practice and the statutes and regulations covering that practice within the state.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Brax, did you
have anything else?
Okay. Well, seeing no other questions before the committee, we're going to set this bill aside for a future meeting. I think I was going to set an amendment deadline, but I think I will confer with committee members on this and then we'll make a decision from there. So that concludes our business today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:38 p.m.